What I'm going to be talking about today is a little piece of the research that Patrizia Gentile and I uncovered when we were doing the Canadian War on Queers. This is the story of both the repression against queer people in the context of the lead up to the 1976 Summer Olympics in Montreal, but also, and I want to underline this, the story of the relatively successful resistance that queer people and other people mounted to the social cleansing prior to the 1976 Olympics. I want to start by talking about the situation that we're in queer communities more generally around the Olympics, because I think that what's going on in some ways is that we're suffering from a little bit of a historical amnesia, or what I might want to describe as the systematic social organization of forgetting. And this is in part because we haven't recorded and we don't remember and we don't pass on the stories and tales of resistance that queer people have engaged in the past. So for many people who are sort of caught up in some of the pro-Olympic hoopla, including people within the gay and lesbian communities, I don't think we remember how, during the 1976 Olympics, we were actually a central target of the social cleansing operation. And it's really important for us to look back at that historical past in order to try to understand the historical present that we find ourselves in. Starting in 1958, across the Canadian state, the Canadian Security Services, the RCMP in particular, and the Security Panel identified gay men and lesbians per se as national security risks. We supposedly suffered from a character weakness that made us vulnerable to blackmail by evil Soviet agents, and therefore we were per se national security risks. Thousands of us were purged from our positions in the civil service and the military. People were interrogated, people were followed. The government and Health and Welfare Canada for 4 years tried to establish a scientific means of detecting queer people in the development of the so-called fruit machine. So there was an ongoing Canadian war on queers that started in 58 in Canada and continued into the 1970s. But in the 1970s, you saw the reemergence of queer organizing in the Canadian context. And the lesbian and gay movements in the 1970s became major surveillance targets for the RCMP. One of the sources of information that we draw upon in the book, The Canadian War on Queers, is access to information program requests. We've got access to lots of the RCMP documents on surveillance of many different queer groups. In part, they were led to do surveillance on gay and lesbian organizing through their pre-existing surveillance of sections of the left, and some sections of the left were involved in the queer movement, which is what led the RCMP into it. I want to just make one comment on national security at the beginning, and what it actually did in relationship to the Canadian War on Queers. It was not only that queer people were expelled from the fabric of the nation. That was certainly an important part of what took place under the security campaigns directed against lesbians and gay men. But there's another side to that which we tend to forget about. The national security campaigns directed against lesbians and gay men also constructed heterosexuality as the supposedly normal, safe, and national sexuality in the Canadian context. We argue in the book that the national security campaigns against lesbians and gay men had an awful lot to do with actively constructing the social relations of the closet that many queer people were forced to live in, or the experience of living a double life, only being queer in queer circles and performing yourself as heterosexual in lots of other contexts. So by the 1970s, the queer liberation movement itself had become a major target of the national security police. Now, what you see happening in 1975, 1976 is the coming together of a number of different security campaigns and social cleansing operations in relationship to the Olympics. So first of all, you have the pre-existing national security campaigns against lesbians and gay men per se, but against the lesbian and gay movements, which it becomes more extensive in the 1970s. The lesbian and gay liberation movements actually are perceived as a national security threat by the RCMP and by security officials within the Canadian state. Surveillance is mandated, especially in the context of resistance to the social cleansing of queer people prior to the 76 Summer Olympics. The gay liberation movement again becomes another threat to national security. I'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later on. This is combined with an escalation of sexual policing against the public visibility of queer sexuality and eroticism. Now, a lot of people will remember that this year is the 40th anniversary of the criminal code reform in 1969. A lot of mythologies have been constructed around that criminal code reform. The Liberal Party in particular wants us to remember that supposedly homosexuality was legalized in 1969. It's really important for us to look back at what actually happened in 69, because what the Canadian government did was basically decide that queer people engaging in sexual activity in the privacy of their own homes would no longer per se be criminalized. They might be considered to be sick, requiring a counselor's care or a therapist's care. They were no longer all going to be criminalized. But every single expression of queer eroticism, especially gay male eroticism, but also lesbian eroticism, in a so-called more public realm, which was basically defined really broadly, was to be criminalized. So you actually see an amazing extension and escalation of sexual policing against queer communities and queer sexuality after the 1969 criminal code reform. So that's part of what's going on in the 1970s. With the emergence of the queer liberation movements, with the emergence of community formation around those movements, you actually have escalating forms of sexual policing. And this is part of what's taking place in the context of the cleanup campaign around the Summer Olympics in 76. But you have that also being tied in with an Olympic cleanup campaign. Now, I want to make a comment on the relationship between the Olympics and national security. It may not seem that obvious, like why protecting the Olympics is a matter of national security for the Canadian state, but it is. We can look at this in many other historical examples as well. The rise of the student movement in Mexico City in 1968 was perceived by the Mexican state not only as a threat to its power because the student movement was really radical and growing, but it was also perceived as a major threat to the Mexican state because they were challenging the legitimacy of the Olympics, and that led to the massacre of hundreds of students in the Central Square in Mexico City. In the Canadian context, taking on board the Olympics and its identification with state agencies at the highest level means that protecting the Olympics, defending the Olympics, becomes a matter of national security itself. So the cleanup campaign prior to the Montreal Olympics was not only about trying to clean up queer people, it was also about trying to clean up street people, homeless people, poor people, and it was also a campaign against the left. And there's some very important parallels between this and what is going on right now. Now, what happened in Montreal in particular, but this was the start of an offensive by the sexual police across the country, was you began to have more and more raids on bars and bathhouses. This is also the first instance of the systematic use of body house legislation against gay establishments. And people might have some knowledge of the body house legislation, and you might think, oh, well, this has to do with places of prostitution. Well, it certainly does, and it still does under the criminal code, but it also has to do with places that are resorted to on a habitual basis for practices of indecency. And queer sex can still, under the criminal code in Canada, to this very day, be understood as acts of indecency. So the police discovered they could actually start to use this clause against gay establishments. And they began to undertake this in some of their campaign in Montreal. I wanted to just give you a sense of the scale and the extent of the anti-queer social cleansing that went on in Montreal. So it starts in 1975. In February 1975, the first raid is actually on the Son Aquarius, 35 arrests. In October 75, this gets extended with more and more raids taking place, including against the lesbian bar in Montreal, popular lesbian bar in Montreal called Babyface. When the police raided Babyface, anyone who did not have a piece of identification on them was taken to the police station and was only released if a parent or close friend could provide proof of her age. I mean, that particular form of harassment directed against young lesbians was enacted at Babyface. There's raids on the Club Baths, on the Neptune Sauna, with 89 arrests. When we get into 1976, there's an increasing escalation of the sex police campaign against lesbian and gay establishments. There's raids on the Sauna Crystal. There's a raid on Gillies, which is another lesbian bar. And in the raid on Gillies, the police come in armed with submachine guns, and they basically line up all the patrons against the wall. All of them are searched. It's quite a sort of intimidating situation for the people who were in Gillies that particular night. photographs were taken of people, and I mean, obviously one of the major concerns of people in the 1970s would have been, my name's gonna get published in the newspapers, right? I'm gonna be outed in ways that are really gonna be detrimental to me. Now, it looked initially like this campaign on the part of the sex police and the RCMP was going to be remarkably successful. Lesbian and gay establishments are being closed down. Lots of people aren't attending them because they fear being arrested. But that's not the whole story. The raids also take place in other centers. So there's a raid that takes place in Ottawa on the Club Baths in May 22nd of 1976 with people arrested as found-ins. That basically means they were just found doing nothing in the Club Baths that night, but because it's a place habitually resorted to for acts of indecency under police investigations and police reports, these people can be arrested as found-ins in a common body house. There was undercover police operatives inside the Club Baths prior to the police raid actually taking place. Now, this is the start of the turning around of this situation, because what you had in Ottawa was a level of organizing, especially through Gays of Ottawa, that had already responded to the sex police. The previous year in 1975, the sex police, the Ottawa police, had organized a major campaign against an escort service. Number of people were arrested, their names were all printed in the newspaper. What ended up happening was one of those civil servants whose name was printed in the newspaper, Warren Zufelt, went to the 13th floor, the top floor of the building he lived in, and jumped off and killed himself. And his note basically said, I have no alternative, right? Because the public, the outing of him was so devastating in his life that he could see no alternative but to take his own life. As a result of the organizing of Gays of Ottawa around this, and the pointing out of how the media was directly complicit in the death of Warren Zufelt by publishing his name prior to any legal proceedings having taken place against him, the media in Ottawa was actually forced to pull back a bit. So they actually no longer would print people's names. They felt a bit guilt-ridden about what they'd actually done to Warren Zufelt. Gays of Ottawa was able to organize pretty impressive resistance. Gays of Ottawa executive members found out about the raid on the Club Baths when they were at a conference of the Coalition for Gay Rights in Ontario in Kingston, actually on the topic of lesbians and the gay liberation movement, where some people from Montreal were also present. They learned about it. They went back to Ottawa. First of all, leafleted all the baths, they held a meeting, they organized a demonstration of 50 people outside the police headquarters, and they also organized defense and got lawyers for the men who'd been charged. This began to turn the situation around, but the most profound forms of resistance took place in Montreal. It should be pointed out that at this point in time, there was a national organization, a cross-country organization called the National Gay Rights Coalition, and there was also the organization called Gays of Ottawa. In Ottawa. Denis LeBlanc was then president of Gays of Ottawa, and this is what he had to say. You'll see that there's some problems with some of the language and perspective here, but you see that people in the queer communities and movements understood this was a much broader cleanup campaign than just being directed against lesbians and gay men. And what Denis LeBlanc wrote at that time in this media release was, this is part of a concerted national effort aimed at cleaning up Canada for the Olympic Games. This effort is not directed solely at gay people. It is common knowledge that police forces have been visiting leftist groups and other organizations which might want to demonstrate during the games. Well, of course, that's happening right now as we speak, prior to the Winter Olympics in 2010. You're also aware of the stories from Montreal about drunks and winos, and this is a bit of the problem with the language here, being given sentences 6 to 8 times their normal lengths in order to keep them off the streets. We have just returned from Kingston, where the local prisons are full of drunks, again, problems with the language that's being used, who have been given 6-month sentences instead of the usual couple of days. Our information is that this cleanup extends from Quebec City through to Toronto, because there actually were Olympic events being held from Quebec City through to Toronto. So it was a pretty wide-scale cleanup campaign, but you begin to see that queer activists understood this was not simply directed against queer people, it was also directed against the left, and was also directed against poor and homeless people. In Montreal and other centers at that point in time. Paul-François Sylvestre, who was a sort of early gay writer, gay historian in the 1970s, wrote at the time, although the police launched a cleanup campaign in order to rid Montreal of its homosexual elements, the exact opposite was reached. And this is quite accurate in terms of its account of what took place in Montreal. Basically, in Montreal, prior to this police repression leading up to the Olympics, There have been lots of differences between Francophones and Anglophones. Men and women, people were very fragmented. But in response to the police repression, people actually came together to form a common campaign against police repression that brought together Francophones, Anglophones, men and women, and also got the support of some sections of the left and the feminist movement as well. And this led up to this successful demonstration of more than 300 people on June 19, 1976, which at that point in time was one of the largest single demonstrations that had been held. Now, we may not think that's very big right now, but prior to the demonstrations against the bathhouse raids in Toronto, the demonstration against the trucks raid in Montreal, and the demonstrations against Anita Bryant, this was one of the largest demonstrations that had taken place. In the organizing for this demonstration, the Montreal RCMP, which was quite tied in to the local sex police in Montreal, sent out all sorts of appeals for information all across the country. In fact, a lot of the documents we managed to get from the Access to Information Program have to do with the request for information on the lesbian and gay liberation movements that the RCMP requested prior to this demonstration, because once again, they perceived the lesbian and gay movement as some sort of overall general risk to national security. And they tried to provide information to the Montreal police to allow them to understand what was going on. Because the Montreal police hadn't really dealt with an organized queer movement since the early 1970s when the FLSH was formed, which of course the police were able to deal with largely by using liquor laws against its social center to undermine it and eventually close down that particular early queer liberation group in Montreal. This demonstration was remarkably successful, coupled with what was going on in Ottawa. And what we actually saw was, after this demonstration, there were no more raids on lesbian and gay establishments in either Ottawa or Montreal. I should point out that this particular figure here, his name is Stuart Russell. He was a gay activist, also a member of the League for Socialist Action, also managed to get hired on as a staff person for the Olympic Organizing Committee in Montreal at that point in time, and he actually was one of the security leaks. He actually provided a lot of information to lesbian and gay movements and other groups about what they were planning to do in terms of trying to suppress non-conforming elements in society. He was fired from his job 2 days after his photo appeared in the newspaper because of his participation in this demonstration. Now, the body politic, I think in a somewhat over-optimistic account in an editorial, said the following after the resistance in Ottawa, and especially after the demonstration in Montreal. We may have pulled it off. Gay people drawn to the movement in numbers as never before may have aborted this country's most organized and vicious attack on gay people. And there's something really important here, because in a certain sense, our resistance, our organizing the defense of people who were charged, actually turned the situation around. And the sex police, by being publicly exposed, had to back off. And of course, they did continue the social cleansing directed against poor and homeless people and street people at this point in time. Now, these demonstrations were also really significant in terms of Montreal and Quebecois history, because this provided the basis for the resistance to the trucks raid in 1977, when more than 2,000 people took over major downtown arteries in Montreal, which was the major sort of origin point of a lot of the expansion of the Montreal queer communities. They also set the stage for the 1977 winning of basic human rights protections for lesbians and gay men. So the reason why that happened in 1977 in Quebec, way before anywhere else within the Canadian state, has something to do with these massive rebellions that people organized that had some of their roots in the Olympic, in the resistance to the Olympics and the cleanup campaign around the Olympics. Now, the campaign for lesbian and gay liberation obviously continued in many different ways. This is just a photo from the lesbian contingent in a demonstration against Anita Bryant in 1978. There was major responses to the moral conservative campaign against lesbians and gay men, trying to import the hatred campaigns in the United States into the Canadian context. And also there were major demonstrations against bathhouse raids and bar raids as well. This leads up to the undermining of the Canadian war on queers. By the 1990s, especially with the ways in which we were able to get the Charter of Rights interpreted to include lesbian and gay rights, and also the ways in which we were able to push forward our struggles in that context, we did undermine, through our own struggles, the Canadian War on Queers. And they eventually would die out officially in the military within the RCMP, and then ceases. Obviously, they informally continued, and it's still important to point out that lesbians and gay men who have something to hide, including perhaps not being out or their partners not being out, can still be considered national security risks if they're in positions where they have any access to security information. So the Canadian War on Queers is not entirely over, but certainly the major basis for it was undermined by our own organizing efforts and the support we were able to win from other oppressed and marginalized groups. But of course, new targets have been found for the war on subversives and the ways in which surveillance and policing have been mobilized against the global justice movement, including many queer people who have been quite involved in the global justice movement. And clearly there's other targets who have been developed as well, including targets in the so-called war on terror. There's a very racialized way in which some people of color, some people identified as being from Arab or Islamic backgrounds, have been racially profiled in the context of the security campaigns associated with the so-called war on terror. Abu Sufyan Abdul Razak spoke in my intro sociology class in Sudbury about 2 weeks ago and described how the Canadian government actually got the Sudanese officials to arrest him, to interrogate him, to torture him, and how CSIS operatives actually interrogated him while he was imprisoned in the Sudan. So the consequences of this in terms of the violation of people's rights, in Abdul Razak's case, the rights of the Canadian citizen, have been quite incredible. And of course, we have to recognize that the so-called war on terror is affecting lots of queer people as well, lots of queer people of color, lots of queer people who are identified as being involved in Islam or of Arab backgrounds. Now, this brings us to our historical present and the particular context in which we're discussing this today, the 2010 Olympics. And what we're once again witnessing is a social cleansing operation prior to Olympics that is directed at poor and homeless people and against street people, and also involves cuts to social programs that have provided some assistance to poor and homeless people in the past. It centrally involves attacks on indigenous people and their land. This is a little bit different than the 75-76 cleanup campaign prior to the Olympics, because even though there are indigenous struggles that relate to Montreal, they were not seen as being so significant at that point in time. There's generalized attacks on civil liberties and human rights, growing surveillance and militarization of our society. And I think an important point to remember about what's going on under cover of the Olympics is you actually have certain very powerful corporate and capitalist interests trying to redesign Vancouver and the region around Vancouver in its own interests, and using the Olympics as the context in which to do that. And it's not a vision that is in the interests of poor people, working class people, indigenous people, or I would want to argue most queer people either. And this is one of the reasons why, part of why I'm doing this, is to try to suggest that we need to reignite queer opposition to the cleanup campaign prior to the Olympics. That social cleansing affects lots of queer people as well. It's not only that it affects queer people that we should be concerned about it, but that we have to express our solidarity and our support for other oppressed and marginalized people who are bearing the brunt of what's taking place under cover of the Olympics. We have to also come out really strongly in support of indigenous struggles and indigenous sovereignty and opposition to the national security practices that are being mobilized now against indigenous people and indigenous activists. And I think we also need to speak out against the type of Canadian nationalism that will be and has been to some extent already whipped up in the context of the Olympics, to express our clear support for queer struggles here and around the world, and also our clear support for international struggles for social justice. Now, I want to just make a brief comment around the gay houses that are being established in Whistler and downtown Vancouver. Some people, I think, trying to provide some legitimacy for the Olympics, but also trying to provide spaces, perhaps, for queer athletes. I mean, people like, I'm sure, are pretty aware that the Olympics are pretty homophobic and heterosexist places for lots of athletes, are trying to provide sort of like somewhat safe places for at least some queer people in Whistler and also in downtown Vancouver. I think it's actually important for there to be queer positive spaces provided for people who need those types of support. But the aspect of it that troubles me is that it's actually partly about legitimizing the Olympics and trying to say that queer people should be getting in on some of the tourist dollars and some of the funding that's coming out of the Olympics. So it can actually be used to legitimize the Olympics. One aspect, though, I just want to mention is there's been some concerns raised by the people involved in organizing these gay houses that some people might want to come to them and claim asylum or claim refugee status. And they're a little bit concerned about that. And I just wanted to express that if there's people who, in their lives, in their own countries, perceive Canada as being a better place at this point in time for them to be, we have every right to support, and they have every right to request asylum and refugee status, and we have every right to support them in asking for that. But we actually need to really support immigrants and refugees, and I think the type of perspective that no one is illegal puts forward is really important here. The final thing I wanted to say is that what's happening in the context of the 2010 Winter Olympics is another deployment of national security. National security is always about, and I emphasize that, excluding some people and including only some other people. The people who are being excluded right now from the fabric of the Canadian nation and are having security practices deployed against them are poor and homeless people and street people, are anti-Olympic protesters, are Indigenous activists. These are the people who are sort of being expelled from the fabric of the Canadian nation. Who is actually being included in this notion of Canada that's being constructed around the Olympics? Well, it's only particular groups of people that are actually being constructed as being sort of at the center of that particular vision of Canada, and it's not poor and homeless people, it's not Indigenous people, it's not people of color, and it's not most queer people either. And I think we have to speak out once again against the deployment of the ideological practice of national security in the context of the Olympics. Hope this has been useful, and I hope it actually has provided a little bit of an antidote to historical amnesia and a social organization of forgetting. And I hope people will take this story and tell lots of other people about it, because I think it's really important for us to break the silence and for us to remember in an embodied way how it is and why it is that we should be resisting national security as it's being deployed around the Olympics right now. Thanks.